AEW Big Business, said to be the home of where we are going to get the debut of the boss in Boston, Mercedes Moné. We're going to chat about this big story. It's been a long time coming, as well as the killer opening, the main event, and everything else in between on this week's AEW Dynamite. What's up, people? My name's Mex, the WrestleManiac, if you will. Back again with another installment of Revolution Radio, and I'm alongside my co-host NK.
Yo, people, it's your boy NK, man. Yeah, man. Listen, an action, listen, headline worthy episode of Dynamite, a lot of stuff to discuss, man. But yeah, man, Tony Khan means business, big business, you know what I'm saying? There's something to brew.
Yeah, there's literally something cooking. I couldn't really believe they named it. It's one of those ones where we saw with Darby and taking the, you know, best in the world. We'll see who's the best in the world. That was the famous line that Darby gave when everyone knew, all right, Punk's coming in. And then that was branded as, what was it, the first dance, that one?
Yeah, the first dance,
When he came back to that rapturous ovation in Chicago in Rampage. And it's very similar in terms of the marketing technique they've gone for here. Hasn't failed them before, so you know it's not going to fail them now, sort of thing. But yeah, it's very exciting. A lot of fans, you know, all day we've been talking, making content about Mercedes Moné, and now it's, you know, this is the through ball, this is it, like it's happening, sort of thing. Like 2 + 2 = 4 come 13th of March. So but I do think there is possibly more to obviously this show, Big Business, than just Mercedes Moné. But firstly, we just kind of, you know, address, I guess, that side of things. So they cut backstage to Tony Khan, who we knew from last week's Dynamite was going to make this big announcement. He said AEW is returning to Boston on March 13th, and it's AEW Big Business. That's the name of the, I guess, TV special it's going to be. He said it's going to be an important night. Tickets are on sale on Saturday. And that was pretty much the announcement. Now, again, for those who are on social media, you would have seen, it was all over the place on, I guess, the internet wrestling community, that TD Gardens in Boston basically, can I say, shat the bed and let everyone know early.
Yeah, I think that was a faux pas on their part, because I'm sure Tony didn't want that information out, but he covered for it well, because he said, oh, as you may have seen on social media, but yeah. I think that was a faux pas on their error, on their behalf.
Yeah, he worked it into what he was saying. But yeah, I think they kind of told everyone beforehand the tickets are available for Boston AEW. And of course, everyone put two and two together from there. I mean, bro, initial reactions, I guess it's what we all thought. It's been confirmed now. What's your thoughts, Mercedes Moné joining AEW?
I mean, this is the exact rollout that I wanted. I wanted a Punk-esque rollout. I wanted, you know, something of the magnitude of Mercedes coming in, because make no mistake, like, Mercedes isn't just like one of the biggest like women's wrestlers. Like, she's probably one of the biggest wrestlers to sign for AEW, if what we're sure to be true happens, that she signs. So the rollout is needed, and I feel it builds anticipation. Obviously, from a business perspective, it's hella smart. But the CM Punk maneuver, you know, it drew Rampage's biggest rating like ever, and then it sold out the United Center. I'm sure Tony Khan plans to have, you know, a lot of people attend, you know, the TD Garden Arena. And you know, this kind of puts pen to paper of how big a draw Mercedes Moné / Sasha Banks is. You know, if people, you know, come out in droves to the show, this show sells out, then we know, okay, cool, she's a draw. So it's an astute strategy that's worked before, but you can only do it with the premier of the premier talent, and that's why he's only done it twice. And it kind of gives you an inkling of how he views her. Now, I'm sure we'll get into the discussion about how this impacts the division, but it clearly shows that he views AEW view Mercedes as they should, as a, you know, top tier entity and a truly marquee or marquee signing.
Yeah, it's as the name says, it's big business. Like, they've clearly won, outbid WWE, which I think is general public knowledge at this point. Everyone knows that she wanted more. WWE weren't ready to give it to her. I think it was Fightful that said she's basically been on the books with AEW since January.
Yeah.
So she must have signed her contract, you know, last month. They've been waiting for when to announce it, and we're still probably, what, 5 weeks out or so from when she's going to make this debut.
And that does make sense as well, because I remember somebody asked, there was a report where somebody asked somebody within WWE, what are your plans to sign Mercedes? I think this was during the Royal Rumble season, and WWE sources basically confirmed that, yeah, she's probably on the books at AEW. They made a quote like, we don't sign somebody, we don't sign talent that already signed or something like
signed,
that.
Signed, yeah. So yeah, it's guess it's all in place. Yeah, like you said, rightly so, this is the rollout. She would have seen CM Punk's rollout. For sure, she would have seen Jade Cargill to WWE and how that was treated. So it's like, you know, if I'm going to be shown, if I'm going to be kind of presented as the top woman here, sort of thing, I need this level of what this top man got when he came in, sort of thing. Yeah. So it should be one in the same. And you know, the early booking of, you know, who will her first opponent be, that conversation and stuff, are probably going to start soon as to what we're going to do, when she's going to get the title. I'm sure maybe in due time contractual details will come out in terms of length of contract she signed and stuff like that. Let's do it now. This women's division is obviously is the issue. Everyone, I think, you know, that wants AEW to succeed and has half a brain in their head would want her to turn up here. And really kind of show her skills, hone her skills. There's some top talents in AEW. The issue has been, and for now we hope, you know, it improves. We won't always be, but right now it is. It's the booking of that division. And for me, I mean, it probably sounds like a broken record at this point. I thought per appearance deal, come in, you know, if we can see the division is operating in a way that is of your standard, of a way that you are happy with, that's when you then pen a long-term deal. But it looks like for this size rollout, I'm suppose it's just a straight, you know, long-term deal. Saying long-term, it could be like 3 years minimum sort of thing she would have probably have to commit at least. I want Tony Khan. Tony Khan seemed very happy with this announcement as he said it, sort of thing. And obviously, like, we'll probably touch on, there might be more to this announcement than just the obvious in Monet. I want him to have this excitement that he has now with booking this division, because all the parts are there. Like, again, last night on Dynamite, one woman segment, the match, and the little bit afterwards with Deonna Purrazzo and Tony Storm. What does it take at this point to, now you've got Mercedes, to just, you know, let's actually do something at this point?
I think with the women's division in AEW, I wouldn't say I'm like, I've seen 100% encouraging signs, but I've seen signs where it's like, there's potential if you do it properly. There's always been potential, but I don't know. There's been certain things in 2024, very minuscule things, but at this point, we're grasping at straws, innit? So I take what I can. But I think with Mercedes, her booking individually, I think, will be decent to great. When it comes to the women's division, I think it's establishing storylines outside of the title. We've said this time and time again. When something isn't attached to a title, it tends to get very little shine. And I think with Mercedes, I think unless they shoot her to the title immediately, she's going to be that draw on her side of this field. Now, what you got to do is build credible opponents to meet her where she's at, or to rise to her. You've got two shows. You've got three shows, Dynamite, Rampage, and Collision, but two flagship shows in Dynamite and Collision. I think you do things like, I don't know, emphasize, we got the rankings back. Emphasize the women's rankings. Number, same thing we saw on Dynamite today with the opener. Have high stake matches that lead to changes in position when it comes to rankings. Or with Mercedes in particular, she's got a lot of inbuilt feuds there already. People have obviously said the Soraya one, but even there's a talent in Willow Nightingale where there's a ready-made story right there. Willow's the person who took her out. Willow's somebody, you know, who's kind of in, I'd say, limbo right now. You can clearly see she's liked in the company, but she's not been given that push yet. And pairing her up against Mercedes gives her something to do against a high-profile, a super high-profile opponent. I'd say it's make or break now. It's now or never. And not just Mercedes, but, you know, there are talks of, you know, people like AW being talks of people like Camille. You've got, you know, the likes of Jamie Hayter waiting on the wings to return. You know, on paper, this division is great. On paper. Like, no longer can they be afforded the excuse of, hey, we don't have the talent to compete with WWE. Whilst that was the case a while ago, and that doesn't excuse the booking, that was the case. Like, there was an early days at AEW, it just wasn't star power for star power. The quality of women's wrestlers weren't exactly comparable. But now you have a mixture of veterans, a mixture of upcoming talent, and now you've got the star. The absolute undeniable star who's got both presence, who's a draw, and more importantly, he's a worker. So right now, it's now or never. 2020, Tony Khan put out a tweet saying 2024 is going to be 2021. We need the women's division. The way you make 2024 a bit better than 2021 is you give the women something to do. Because even in the heydays of AEW being great, we talk about the greatness of the Elite saga, so on and so forth, women's were always lacking behind. So it's now or never, man. And honestly, right now, the year's gotten off to a good start on the product as a whole. But women is always a separate issue. But for me, I'm tremendously excited about Mercedes because one thing about her, as I've always said, we'll see it on TV, but we see with her, if she's not happy, we will know.
Mm.
We'll know. So this is really, like, you know, I wouldn't say make or break for the division, I think, at this point. If it doesn't work now, it just won't work. It just won't work.
And this is what makes me, I guess it's feeling valued. Like, that's why Mercedes has chosen to go ahead with AEW, because, you know, they have matched the maybe financial demands that she wants. Can they match the storyline, you know, demands that she wants and the time given to develop it? This is the question at this point, because ultimately that's why she left WWE. You know, she wanted time with the tag division on two different occasions to try help establish people in that division. Probably that mixed with things like always being second fiddle to Charlotte, and then at the time, the emerging Becky Lynch. She needs to be treated correctly. Right now, on the face of it, this is a good start in terms of how she would want to be treated and how she deserves to be treated. But it's just that division. I was speaking to Derek the other day, and we were saying that, you know, ultimately it's not down to her. She should be able to just come to somewhere and wrestle. Like, she shouldn't have the job of, you know, raising the bar here when it comes to women. And we're talking about, you know, people that could come in and book. And it hit me today when I was watching AEW, like, right, we know she's coming in at this point, but who's going to be the person that we can trust to book this? Because right now, there isn't evidence that that person works for AEW. And Scott D'Amore came to my head. This guy that they've just got rid of in TNA for whatever reason. And granted, I'm saying Scott D'Amore now. Like, if he's involved in some scandal or something, then obviously not. But if this guy has, you know, in most circles, people would agree, has cultivated and booked consistently the best women's division throughout North America for several years now. So I don't know in terms of roles where he would want to go. Obviously, he'll sit under Tony Khan or whatever the case is, or if he wants to go on and be, you know, a CEO elsewhere, who knows? But I think Tony Khan should bring this guy in.
Mm.
And maybe that's his sole focus. If he could do half the job that he's done in the TNA Knockouts division in AEW, there is no argument, there is no discussion anymore. Like, and from what it seems like, a lot of people were gobsmacked. I heard when they were divulging the information of his sacking to the locker room and stuff, Gail Kim had to ask everyone to go on mute because people were literally shouting and losing their minds that they had lost this guy. He has kept harmony in that dressing room. He has brought in talents to that dressing room. He was the one that worked that dressing room and booked that dressing room into a state of, you know, getting it to a point where they can bring back TNA. He's said to have wanting to be pushing for more, and it was the people on top, is it Anthem, that Anthem, were basically saying, no, like, we're just going to work with the resources we have. And that's ultimately why they got rid of him. I think he's too much in TNA sort of thing, like, and maybe, you know, he's like a vanity project. But the people he's worked for haven't said so. I saw Naomi Trinity voicing her opinion on his sacking the other day as well. She's left there now. So I generally think Scott D'Amore could be the man that they can bring in and at least, right, like, let's start from here and settle this shit and, yeah, do some great stuff with these women.
Yeah, nah, I think Scott D'Amore is a great... I advocated for Scott D'Amore when he got sacked. I was like, he should have a role within AEW. I didn't quite picture the women's division. I thought Ring of Honor.
That's not
as a demotion, but like somebody who can actually like elevate that product, because that product it's not existent at this point. And just having Tony's eyes solely on like Dynamite and giving Scott D'Amore just essentially free reign of ROH, I think that's kind of where what I envisioned. But listen, with Mercedes, it's like with the women's division, it's like, like I said, it's make or break right now. I'm just in the position where, like, I'm going to watch, and I want to, like, I think I have faith in Mercedes being treated well at bare minimum. I think, and I noticed a pattern of Tony Khan when it comes to people he really values, they always get the red carpet.
Mm-hmm.
Danielson, red carpet. CM Punk, red carpet. Heck, even if you go back to Moxley, red carpet. When we've said about guys like Jay White, for example, who we all rate, remember his debut. And I've all like, and I think even like you could start noticing the pattern. Yeah, look at how they debut, and that will kind of tell the tale of the tape. Obviously, it's not the case for everyone, because Samoa Joe had a pretty decent debut. Debuted in ROH. Now he's AEW champion. So it's not a rule for all, but it is something I do pay attention to now, because I started noticing things. I said, hold on. The people who just randomly debut on like Dynamite tend to just stay at that level. And the people who get, you know, as much as, for even another example, Adam Cole. Adam Cole's been consistently injured, right, and been in and out. But as soon as he came back, Tony Khan gave him the biggest main event in AEW history. You know what I'm saying? And there is a clear pattern with the man when it comes to who he likes and who he favors. And you can see that from the inception. So when it comes to Mercedes herself, I'm sure she'll get everything that she wants for her personal self. Now, when it comes to the women, it's just about, my opinion is, it's less about Mercedes, is that, how do you get these women hot? Do you do tournaments? Do you do... What is it that you do to build these women to a point? Because I feel like right now, when she comes into AEW, aside from like the champion herself, she swallows everyone up.
Yeah.
And that's due to them not being built to a degree to withstand the storm that is Mercedes.
I think you mentioned two good names. Soraya could be good because it's high profile. There's history there in terms of, you know, I don't want to say it, but Monet was the last person that worked with Soraya before she got her injury.
Yeah.
We have Willow that you mentioned as well. I would, side note, I want a Mercedes heel run.
Oh,
we'll talk about this as well. I want her as a heel. Ooh. Maybe not from the beginning. I know people are going to cheer her.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, this comparison that we have made in terms of Willow could be Bailey. Like,
yeah.
I think there's no one better than Mercedes to maybe, you know, really harness that and bring that out of her, sort of thing. So I definitely would want to see that. And that's another thing. If we are completely honest, yes, Mercedes Moné, the CEO, and, you know, Mercedes Moné or Sasha Banks, sorry, it's similar in terms of character. But we haven't really seen a Mercedes Moné in a week-to-week TV aspect. We don't know what this character is going to give us.
Yeah,
like, is it just going to be Sasha Banks with the chains off or what? Like, we don't really know. So the character itself is quite unproven, although, you know, we know in ring she's more than solid, she's fine, and it's kind of another iteration of the same character. So there are some unanswered questions. I think we definitely cannot miss an opportunity. I would say this year, like, obviously when she comes in, maybe somewhere post, I don't know, because you don't want to do it too close to the men's. Maybe somewhere literally like just post All In, we have like a women's Continental Classic.
Mm.
I don't think we can afford to miss the boat on that. Or maybe it doesn't have to have a belt at the end, but maybe a women's tournament.
Yeah, for sure. I absolutely agree.
I think we definitely need that. Harness your relationships with others, your... What, you got Undertaker in there?
My room's going mad. Basically, the screen I'm using to project light is going off, so I'm just fixing that.
Oh, minor. Yeah, harness your relationships that you've got with other promotions to bring some talent in if need be. But again, we could use this as an opportunity to kind of show off the women's division. There are some top talents there, man. And like you're saying, it's like the Mercedes story now, and then whatever's going to happen with the title. And very soon she is going to be, you know, with the title. I don't think they can probably go till the end of the year without her being champion. It will happen before then. It's just a matter of, yeah, like, how are we going to bring these other women up as we do that?
I think the money feud right now that I'm seeing, no pun intended, is her and Jamie Hayter. I think... Mm. Once Jamie, and obviously you don't want to rush these things, you kind of want to give these things the proper stage it deserves. But I think, like, right now, I'm thinking if we can make it to All In and do like the Jamie Hayter match that I think we were supposed to get, her in England, Mercedes, obviously, the first time we saw her at AEW was at All In.
Yeah.
I think that's the money, that is the match. That's the match where. Because I think, like, genuinely speaking, I think Jamie Hayter is the person that I feel like AEW, the one person AEW fully cultivated into something great. And I'm not going to say the injury took it away from her, because they kind of were fumbling with the outcasting. But Jamie Hayter was like, her rise was just meteoric, man. It was just like, as soon as she became like a full-time fixture in the division, she was there. Yeah. And she's somebody that I feel not necessarily match Mercedes in terms of star power, but the people, we absolutely love Jamie Hayter. So, like, when I see the feud I'm thinking of that is going to be money is Jamie Hayter. But you're right, Willow is somebody that I really want to see go toe-to-toe with Mercedes.
Yeah, I think the Willow Soraya's could just be to warm her up before she gets to the title and stuff. I personally think that she's going to be champion by All In. Yeah, I honestly think that she's going to be AEW Women's Champion by the time we're at All In. I think maybe she wins it Double or Nothing or something like that. I don't think it's going to be too long. I don't think they can afford for it to be too long. And with one eye on that Wembley show, on All In, I think Jamie Hayter must be back by then and working her way back into the title picture for the title that, you know, she had to lie down for because she wasn't well enough to continue going. So, yeah, I think we're definitely looking at Mercedes Moné as champion fairly soon. And then All In will probably be her and Jamie Hayter for the title. Nathan says here in the chat, I may go to London AEW, so hopefully she will be in it. Yeah, I think you don't sign Mercedes Moné if she's not going to do these big dates, you know, and stuff for you. I think Mercedes Moné will, you know, part of the appeal of coming to AEW would have been something like All In. So yeah, I think it's important that, of course, if she's on the show. I was saying, NK, that I generally think, obviously you said Hayter versus Mercedes at All In. I think she's going to be champion by then.
Okay.
Generally think she'll be champion. Maybe like I never remember the pay-per-view schedule, still getting used to it. We've got Double or Nothing in what, June or something?
Yeah, May, June.
And it's Forbidden Door before or after that?
Forbidden Door is after Double or Nothing.
Okay, after. And then after that is
All In, All Out season
in August. He's gonna be champion by Double or Nothing. I generally think so. I think she walks in as champion, her versus Hayter. You do that at All In. I don't think necessarily could be a title switch situation. Maybe, but I think she's gonna be champion by Double or Nothing, 100%. Like maybe if she wins it at that pay-per-view.
Interesting, because maybe it's just me following the CM Punk route of things. You know how like CM Punk took a while to get to the title. I was envisioning by the end of 2024, but I was maybe thinking like towards Full Gear, she might be champion.
I think the men, and Tony has always booked the men better. The men had a sturdy plan of who the champions are going to be in order and told the story. And I'm not sure if we have that with the women. Tony Storm is flying through these women at an incredible rate to the point where they're bringing people back, warming them up for 3 weeks, feeding them to Tony Storm, and then they're gone again. So it's one of them ones like, we cannot avoid this. Yeah. And I think while Tony is, you know, as hot as she is now, like, it has to be a problem with Tony Storm's character that someone else has come in and taken your star power, your star light. Like, someone else is the shining star of the company and it's no longer you, despite you're still the champion.
And I think with Tony Storm, they've already built something after the title reign. Whatever her and Mariah May got going on, it's going to continue into a feud at some point. So I think Tony Storm's got something inbuilt there. I want to see just how the other women just factor into this as well. But yeah, man, I'm optimistic about it because I just want to see Mercedes back wrestling in general. And I feel like AEW's a very difficult venture, but if she manages, on the flip side, if somehow, some way, she manages to, you know, upheave this division, and, you know, granted, nothing in wrestling is due to one person, but it's a perception game. If the division suddenly cleans its act up and gets good post her arrival, that's another notch on her already storied career in it. And then we're just going to be lauding Mercedes again. Like, oh my God, she saved the division. It shouldn't be this way, but it is what it is.
It's where we are, As we were alluding to before as well, you know, big business, money signs, Rainmaker, I'm making it rain, is also the sorts of the same thing with business. And like, this also could be where they're going to debut potentially Okada. One better people have spoken about, maybe even Will on this show as his first like official AEW outing, because it would have. I don't know if they're going to get him on that Revolution show or not. I know he did mention trying to be on that show, but if they don't, then this is like we're saying, like the following week after that pay-per-view is where it's all going to take place. So I even spam Will and Okada on this, you know, very similar to, you know, Danielson, Adam Cole, Ruby Soho, all on that night when we were watching All Out. There's a lot of cards to play with right now, and I guess it's just waiting to see if he's gonna just, you know, bang them all out at once.
Listen, like I said, I'm still gonna reiterate that I'm not happy that I'm in this situation with Okada. Like, I'm not, but we are where we are. It's done. It is what it is. Like, life is life. But if Tony does debut Okada and Monet in the same night, that is like a massive statement. And we, like, Tony as a negotiator, he must be, like, I wonder, like, obviously he's offering these guys money, but, like, there's something happening in those negotiating tables. Because, like I said, these people are, you know, free agents. They're talking with WWE. They're talking with, I'm sure, other companies as well. But for some reason, it's always the thing of, like, they end up in AEW. And it's like, what is he offering these men?
It's one of two, one, if maybe not both of them. It's the creativity. Like, they are going to have a voice when booking themselves or being booked on TV, which is important to anyone that's trying to create a brand or some kind of, you know, intellectual property amongst themselves. Yeah. So I know I'm willing to hear if I'm going to work, you know, for someone and they're like, no, you're going to be in these conversations when we're deciding what to do with you, then 100% you listen. And then two, it's the ability to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we've heard Will's deal that he can live in England and, you know, come and he can still work for other promotions and this, that, and the other. And, you know, that's the main thing with WWE. I think with WWE, they're such a global force and notorious in terms of name WWE. Like, it's like, we don't have to bow for anyone. Yes, we want you, but this is what we're prepared to offer you. And if they don't accept it on a financial thing, you already know you're probably not going to have the hold on creative that you would like, and you're definitely not going to get to work anywhere else. So all of a sudden, it's not that much of an attractive deal anymore. But now we have this great option in AEW. It's ticking multiple boxes for these people. So I'm not taking away anything away from Tony in terms of obviously him being a good negotiator, but there is more to offer than just money, if you see what I mean.
Yeah,
he's offering these people.
No, for sure. It's just crazy that we're in this like time where, even with Okada, I kind of still think he's going to WWE. I don't know why. Maybe the dirt sheets have swayed me. Maybe he's going to WWE, but just the debuting Okada and Mercedes within the same night. I mean, so far Dynamite in 2024 and AEW, the product feels back to normalcy. It feels like AEW again. And, you know, of course, debuts aren't the only thing that make a product good. But the thing about 2021 was the fact that, hey, AEW can attract these big talents. And I think it's extremely important right now, because in 2024, we've got Danielson's retirement year. We've got Kenny Omega, obviously still injured at the moment. And a lot of other wrestlers reaching, you know, the latter portion of their career. These men are going to have to be replaced. And we see it in football all the time, where we see a team like Man City. It will be stockpiling talent, but eventually the old guard will go away. And I feel like, for example, signing Will Ospreay is genius. You've got Kenny, you know, in the latter portion of his career, Danielson gone. Who's going to be that workhorse guy? Of course, you've got guys like Hanman who are established and so on and so forth. But adding Ospreay into the mix just makes absolute sense. He fits in like a glove. Okada, we've spoken about how we could book Okada. But I'm still unsure of how he fits into the grand scheme of things, because Okada is such a unique talent in the sense where you can't book him on weekly television, in my personal opinion. You have to like treat him as almost like an attraction. Someone who, obviously, he'll be there regularly, but I can't see him in a backstage segment every week. The allure of Okada is, oh my God, look at this guy. Kind of what they do with Roman Reigns, but to a lesser degree. Where he shows up, and every time he shows up, it's an event, it's a movie. And as kicking it off this way is the way to go. I'd actually start the show with Mercedes the same way they did with Punk and end it with Okada. I would end it. Yeah. I'd start the show with Mercedes because that's who they're here to see. And I'm sure it'll be like similar to Punk where the crowd are just antsy. They are ready to see her, you know, give the people what they want early. And then at the end, when, you know, they feel like they've been satisfied, so on and so forth, then you debut Okada. I would say you debut an Okada against a Moxley. Straight away. John Moxley's at the point in his career right now where he's done it all in AEW. Right now, it's almost like he's doing side missions. The CMLL stuff is great. It's a side mission. So, and in New Japan, they've never actually faced each other on a one-on-one match. So it's still a new feud that Okada can do, and it automatically just sets precedent and puts him at the top. Because right now, what you do with Okada right now is, I think you have to stall. You have to stall for like a year, because the title scene right now, which we'll get into later, seems very defined. Seems very... And putting Okada in that title picture is great. I'm not going to complain if Okada comes in and wins the belt. But then you're going to take the opportunities away from a guy like Swerve, for example, who's been organically built. Or you're either going to take the title off of him too early or jump in front of him in line and prevent him from even getting the title in the first place. Do you know what I'm saying? And as much as I love Okada, I'm all about companies building their own projects. Do you know what I'm saying? That's what a company's for. Swerve's obviously a name that's been around the industry here and there, but it feels like AEW right now are elevating him to a level which he hasn't been in previous promotions. So continue with that mission. Continue with the mission that you're on right now. And then you can factor in Okada. And people forget, Okada's like, yeah, he's 36, but he's quite young relative to what he's accomplished. He's quite young. Waiting like 6 months, 7 months on the back burner isn't going to affect his career too tough, so long as you give him meaningful stuff. If you give him, you know, JAS nonsense, yeah, we riot. But if you give him meaningful, you know, dream match feuds, I think you can satiate people's appetite for at least a couple months until it's time to really put him in the title picture.
Yeah. With Okada and me, I think, like, I'm happy for wherever he goes. I don't mind. Wherever he's going, I'm watching. It doesn't matter to me. I think it'll be safer for him in AEW just because we know the reverence will be there. The fans, the management will acknowledge who Okada is, what he's done elsewhere, etc., etc. Obviously, they're still in partnership with where he's coming from. So I think that will be a very safe place for him to go into and be treated well. Same way you just said, Mercedes could be almost a savior for this division. It's probably why it interests me. It piques my interest a bit more if he was to go to a WWE, because now this is someone that they can't mess around. You said you want to improve the perception of Japanese talents over there in WWE and what's happened in the past. Here we go. We're giving you the best that the country has produced for years and years, the top boy. So if you find a way to mess this up, then yeah, no Japanese talent should ever touch you lot with a bloody barge pole. So I think that's, for me, that same kind of building a legacy, being the savior of Japanese talents in WWE, I would like to see that attached to to Okada's name. Same way I want to see the savior of the women's division is attached to Mercedes Moné. Like, she got them to pull their finger out and fix what's going on. You mentioned the landscape of AEW, the talents, the amount of talents they have. And again, when I was watching this show today, I thought, and I know you're not for this, but maybe we don't call it this, but I think a brand split is needed. Now, we don't need to call it a brand split per se, but bro, even like over the past few weeks, Collision has dipped. Like, really? Okay, don't get me wrong. The wrestling is still, it's still very wrestling centric. Okay. And I feel like, yeah, it provides that to the fans, like really good wrestling matches. And there's more time than obviously a Rampage to tell those stories in the ring. But I'd say dipped in regards that it is not a consequential show. I don't feel there's anything happening on there that is necessarily feeding into Dynamite or like, I just missed Collision, like what have I missed sort of thing. You've probably missed a good, really good wrestling match. But in terms of like a, like stories being coherent between the two, I just don't know. And then, like we're saying, like I'm saying, we look at like the likes of a, what's this show called? A Dynamite. NK, you there?
Okay, I'm here. So welcome, disconnected. Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
You mean?
Yeah, I was saying, we look at the likes of the talents on Dynamite, the talents coming in and all of that kind of stuff. I just feel like people need space to breathe. Like, maybe with a Collision as its own separate roster, without saying the words brand split, we can get, you know, two strong women's stories, two on Collision, two on Dynamite. And Okada going into a main event picture, like you can do all of that with two shows that now feel like they are on par with one another, and then just one floating world champion between the two shows. Like, I just really feel like even this week, there's no Jay White on Dynamite. What are these men called? The Undisputed Kingdom had like a 10-second something in the back. I'm just not sure if there's enough time for everyone to breathe on this one show, Dynamite, anymore.
So, can you see me?
No.
All right, cool. I'm gonna leave and then come back.
All right, cool. So, yeah. Let's see what you lot are saying in the chat. Arpit says Okada can debut against Hangman too. Yeah, that's a good shout. That's a really good shout. I think that's I guess on the assumption that, you know, Hangman hasn't gone on to win maybe the AEW world title and he's just fallen out of favor. Maybe by then Swerve is the champion, and if Okada does come in on the 13th of March, Hangman doesn't have much else to do. And with maybe what we just saw with Hangman on this week's show, which we'll talk about in a bit, there could be a heel turn in there, and Hangman's you know, being a heel whilst Okada is obviously the renowned babyface and stuff. SDK08, he says AEW have over 190 wrestlers under the AEW banner. I don't know if you counted or you're just you're guessing there with the amount of wrestlers they have, but they have a lot of wrestlers and they have a lot of people in the same kind of positions. We've got a lot of people in wrong positions as well, not doing necessarily what they should be doing because of, you know, how stacked it is. So yeah, what's your thoughts on what I'm saying, NK, in terms of maybe not call it a brand split, but we have two defined rosters that are kind of weighted evenly so that both shows are thriving and everyone's getting enough time?
I'd say a soft split in terms of like, yeah, this guy's a predominantly Collision person, predominantly AEW, but there's still that. I don't want it to be like the early days of Collision where it felt like an island here and an island there. We know why that was the case. But yeah, there is a lot of, there is, with Okada, there is
a lot of guys that even I think of a guy like Takeshita right now. And I'm like, because I want to see, I'd love to see an Okada Takeshita match. But at this point, Takeshita can't afford a loss. So what do you do with that? Like, there's a lot of talent I'd love to see Okada face, but they aren't primed to a level where I feel like they can afford to face Okada right now. Because I feel like when Okada joins AEW, I feel like the way I saw Tony Khan hugging him at the press conference, and again, it goes back to my whole, like, you can tell when Tony likes someone theory. Put it this way, I don't see Okada getting Jay White treatment, respectfully. I just don't see it. Like, if that happens...
Jay White shouldn't have got Jay White treatment.
Exactly, but we saw from the... Like, it was almost like an uphill battle from the moment he debuted, where it was like, for me, it's just, where does he fit? And as much as I would love to see him in this roster, and there are matches upon matches for him, it's the long-term thing of, I feel like he's going to undercut someone. I don't feel like Okada is going to be pushed to the back. I feel like Okada is going to undercut the push of someone else. That's what I genuinely think is going to happen. So the likes of a Konosuke Takeshita, the likes of a Daniel Garcia, where it's going to be like, sorry, Kazuchika's here. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Kazuchika's here. And I got William, and I got Hangman, and I got Swerve. MJF is to come back. Adam Cole is to come back. Kenny's to come back. I still got to do... Danielson's going to be semi-retired. I still got to do stuff with Moxley. Daniel Garcia. What we could do is we could give you a good run in the Continental Classic again. Yeah? Say that.
It'll upset guys. And Okada, for me, is definitely not a talent that shouldn't have the title. I think he's just become synonymous with being a world champion, holding, you know, a top title that he can go periods without it for sure and chase, but I just feel like the AEW world title would just fit with Okada.
And it's the easiest reign. I think it's the easiest reign to book. Attraction. Come out on Dynamite. What would you say? Do you think, and we say this a lot with foreign talent, but I'm just asking it for, do you think he needs a manager or something?
If they want to do something different, I think something like that could work. I don't know who that person could necessarily be off the top of my head, but I think if they want to do something different, 100%, because it, like you're saying, him just wrecking guys with the AEW world title, next one, it will look something akin to, you know, these IWGP runs he's had.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you could spice it up and give him someone as a mouthpiece sort of thing.
Because he did have that even in Japan. Like, in Japan, he had Gedo for years.
Gedo, that's true. Yeah,
he had Gedo for years. So it's not even a thing of, oh, he's Japanese. Like, it's literally... And somebody going out there being like, the Rainmaker, the... I think, like, honestly, I don't know why. Maybe I think of Paul Heyman, but obviously he's in WWE, but just like... I would book Okada like a Lesnar, the attraction, just somebody who comes in. They don't need to say much, because, and we've seen that Okada's aura translates into the States. When he's been on Dynamite, we've been on Forbidden Door, we've all, amongst his peers, even he shines. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it works, and it works for this audience. We revere, we respect him. Just a mouthpiece that's just like the Rainmaker. 720 longest reign in IWGP. It fits.
It does fit.
And I'm just thinking, but who is there? Because one thing about AEW, they don't necessarily have like a Paul Heyman type guy. And Don Callis should never even. I'm done with Don Callis. He should never even think of.
He's ruined his market.
Ruined his market. He's doing too much. But
Yeah, I mean. Could give that a thought, could be someone, but Yeah, bro, we've went long on this. There's a lot of incomings, an exciting first quarter for AEW, and hopefully sets up nice for, you know, a good spring, summer, and then towards the end of the year. To wrap up, I guess, what's going to happen in this quarter, you know, we go to the opening segment of the show. It was the number one contenders match between Hangman Adam Page and Swerve Strickland. Swerve, who on Collision had told Nana, don't get involved. This is just, you know, one-on-one. I kind of got to beat him myself. I can't go through every spot on this match. This match, yeah, for a match that obviously Wrestle Dream was like a straight up match. We had the crazy match that was the Full Gear match. And then we've had the singles match now where I guess Swerve had, you know, made that babyface move in telling Nana don't get involved. Yeah. Hangman was definitely working more heelish.
Yeah.
I thought this match was very, very good. Very, very good. Definitely got more out of it, probably because where we are in the feud as well, than the Wrestle Dream match that they had the first time. Going on first, I think it became blindingly obvious to everyone that, right, time limit draw special is what we're getting. But I don't think it took away from the match. I enjoyed so many parts of this match. Even the Hangman rolling out to the table just collapsed and just didn't stand. And then obviously they worked around that, got another table out, and we saw the Deadeye through the table. Yeah. The part where like Nana danced around Swerve to power him back up to get him into the ring. The part where there was the buckshot lariat that Swerve done, and then hit him with the stomp afterwards. Yeah. Hit him with maybe about two or three stomps in that match. You know, we got the call on when Swerve just looked like he was gonna win it on the two count. The bell went, and Swerve done what has become like a notorious move in AEW now. He asked for five more minutes, and Hangman was brilliant here. Like, oh no, you can't get it. You can't get it. You were supposed to beat me. You were supposed to beat me. You didn't do it. No more minutes. Like, Hangman looked like he escaped. When Tony Schiavone took to the mic, Hangman looked like he had seen a ghost. Like, no, what are you about to say? You're not gonna make me wrestle some more now, sort of thing. And to be honest, if there's anything I'm gonna poo-poo about this, it was this. Like, I don't know how they would have done it, but I don't feel like Tony Schiavone announcing here that, you know, it's gonna be a triple threat. It kind of built the crowd to thinking that Tony Schiavone was gonna tell him to get back in the ring, that Tony wants the match to continue. And then he just said, no, it's gonna be a triple threat. And Hangman still sold it well and was like, no, that he shouldn't be. He didn't beat me, sort of thing. But I just feel like expectations maybe, you know, rose a bit. And then it's just like, okay, we got what we thought we were gonna get anyway. But yeah, it's just a manner maybe that way it was done. But what did you think of this match, the third installment in their feud?
Listen, this was tremendous from the open. Even Swerve and Hangman walking backstage to the ring, and this, it had stakes. Obviously, the stakes are obviously for the title, but the treatment, the presentation of this was like, no, like this has absolute, like, the highest of stakes you can get. Like, this is an opportunity for the title. And the match, I mean, Swerve and Hangman's chemistry, I mean, bloody hell. I mean, it's going to be one of these feuds where they fight forever. Like, I think Hangman, like, it's funny. I think Hangman's greatest rival in AEW might be Swerve. I know people like to say Omega. Omega's probably the more heart-filled storyline. Mm. But in terms of just, like, a rivalry where, like, I want to see these man fight again. And I remember saying back in December, maybe cool off on the Swerve and Hangman thing. You don't want to run it down to the ground. But they've managed to still keep this hot.
Yeah.
And this has been a story that's been going on since, what, Wrestle Dream? Wrestle Dream was in, what, like September?
Yeah, October.
October. So, props to them. And even just like, is Swerve now a... Are we going to turn Swerve a face at this point? Because the crowd and the internet are just finding it extremely hard to boo him. And it's one of those things where obviously they're definitely leaning into how Hangman Page's more cowardly side. But do we just commit? Do we just at Revolution or whatever? Do we just commit? Okay, Swerve's a face now, or do we kind of keep him as like a in between person? Because I don't think he can't go back to being a heel. I don't see a scenario where Swerve gets booed unless he does something, unless you create like a whole angle out of it again, like he invades someone's house again or so on and so forth. But just Swerve as a presence, I don't see him getting booed.
But this is the whole point, bro. This guy broke into a man's house and was here doing, you know, talking to his baby and that. And if the crowd aren't going to boo him after that, then, you know, he's a face. And I think that promo on Collision was a very kind of heartfelt promo. He obviously, it's Black History Month. He bigged up a lot of Black history, Black talents, whether in WWE or in AEW. He mentioned their names and everything, and then said he's going to add his name to that list. He told Nana, don't get involved. This is straight up. I feel like this is the quote-unquote cool way for him to turn to a baby face. He doesn't have to go around smiling and kissing babies and all of that kind of stuff. Like, I think they have done it. And I think with Hangman, like we saw, like he was wrestling that a more kind of heel style, and then his actions afterwards, running from the fight, like it was brilliant. But like for me, like you're now definitely more that side of the fence than a baby face. So I think they've done this little double turn.
Yeah, and obviously we're only like what, like a month and a couple weeks into Samoa Joe's title reign. I don't want to like beat the whole MJF title reign was bad over the head, because I think we discussed that ad nauseum. But this feels more akin to an AEW title reign, a title challenge. It feels more like AEW again. And you know, I think it's fun to say, oh, the feeling is back. Listen, like, there's a ways to go, but these are tangible steps. You could see the difference in the presentation of the championship compared to, you know, the last holder. And just the level of seriousness that the title's being approached with. I'm just loving it, man. I'm loving it. And it's like, I'm going into this triple threat at Revolution and I don't know who's going to win. I think everyone assumes Swerve's going to win, but with the way Hangman walked out, Hangman is hell-bent on ruining Swerve. And I think a potential storyline going into Revolution is Samoa Joe retains. Swerve may have like maybe on the brink of victory, and Hangman just spoils it, even at his own expense.
I saw someone say something like similarly to what you just said, and eventually Hangman maybe just lies down and tells Joe to pin him, and just so Swerve doesn't win the title. Mm. Maybe he can't continue, but it's just like anything than that guy winning it sort of thing.
Yeah, like maybe he thought like Swerve's about to take a move. He pushes Swerve out of the way. Swerve's about to do a move. And he gets Joe to interfere or something like that. But yeah, I think Swerve has broken Hangman Page. He's broken it. Like he's unhinged. And do you know what? A Hangman Page like heel turn or a Hangman Page, you know, character change is something I wasn't anticipating. But at the same time, it's like wrestlers do things for a reason. The mustache, the change, like all of these things. Like he doesn't look like the, I'm a relatable, cool young guy. He looks like a madman now with the mustache. And I thought like that's all intention. That's all feeding into a bigger story. And now I'm going into Revolution thinking, Swerve could win, but I could easily see Samoa Joe retain. The only thing I'm pretty set on is Hangman losing. I think that's the safest option. Hangman loses, but it's just who walks out champion, which is again great. It's great.
I think right now we're probably still the best part of 3-4-ish weeks away from it. I think it's too early to kind of call it right now.
Yeah,
I think I'm probably with you that no matter what happens, it probably won't be Hangman leaving as champion.
Yeah.
But with everything else, I think, it can't call it right now because yeah, it's very interesting. It's nicely poised, and they've done a great job telling this story. I didn't think that they could tell this story between these two, particularly Swerve and Hangman, so quickly. In terms of, we've literally had like one match, then that first match was followed by the next pay-per-view. They ran it back, and then 2 months later, we're here again, sort of thing. But they've told the story very well, so it kind of makes sense as to have them compete so frequently, especially when it's, you know, building towards the world title. Like, that is the prize. It's not we're here wrestling to show how good best friends we are or any kind of nonsense like that. It's like, who is the better man here, sort of thing. And even Swerve selling at the end, sort of thing. Like, it's almost like failure, like, I was meant to beat this guy without you, Nana, without Mogul Embassy, and I failed. I didn't beat him. Crisis of confidence, as I like saying, like, can I actually beat him if no one else was to interfere, sort of thing. So he's got his own kind of thing he's got to kind of work through in regards to this story now as well. But yeah, Hangman with the character change. And then what we'll go into next in regards to the Bucks and the Sting stuff. I'm here for a solid heel elite run. Honestly, I'm here for it. And maybe if we get Omega back, you know, somewhere down the line this year, like, I think it could be great. Let's talk about that main event. So Ricky Starks, Big Bill, defending a title against Sting and Darby Allin. I was laughing when I saw them, I think earlier on the night, must have announced this match was happening, tornado tag, because I thought, there it is. Have you noticed that Sting doesn't, obviously he only wrestles like tag matches, but have you noticed they've all been like tornado tags?
Yeah, for sure. Sting can't wrestle a match, like a traditional match, like I thought.
Yeah.
He can't. It's just that. So you have to gimmick it. Smoke, mirrors, you know, high spots. You have to gimmick those matches because it's what, how this thing was. 60 plus year old man in the 64. Ring. 64 year old man in the ring. Yeah, like it's gonna kind of take away from the mystique. But if you tornado tag it, and if you've got someone like Butt Darby, who's gonna, you know, do the bulk of the work, and all you have to do is really dive off a balcony, which is still mad. I'm not diminishing how mad that balcony is, but you kind of reduce your spots to like these big one-off spots here and there, and then you'll finish.
Yeah, then you can rest for a bit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I hear it. It was just literally, obviously, from last week when they announced this match was happening, a tag match. I was like, oh, when I got to switch on Dynamite this morning, I was thinking, oh, dude, like it's just a tag match. It's usually all been tornado tag. And by the time the graphic popped up, I think in the first match, I said, oh, there you go. Tornado tag, like to follow suit with everything he's been doing. But yeah, really, really, really fun match between these lot. The Big Boss Man slam that Big Bill done to Darby after he flew out of the ring. How he caught him and just done that so effortlessly. You know, we've been singing Big Bill's praises anyway. Like, this guy has really kind of turned things around for himself. So kudos to him. Like you mentioned, the big dive from Sting in from the crowd onto Ricky and Big Bill. Even towards the end, that kind of emotional thing, like it's like Ricky Starks didn't want to do him. Like Ricky Starks just like thing, man, but I have to do what I have to do, and he went for the a spear. And then eventually we got the what's his finisher called again? The Scorpion Death Drop. And yeah, Sting pinned him. His family were ringside. His two sons, his daughter, here to see the moment where their dad, at 64 years old, becomes AEW World Tag Team Champion, which was a nice moment. I think it was really cool. They had the confetti out and everything like that. Only for the party to be completely crashed by Nicholas and Matthew Jackson in their Sunday best white suits, $5,000 apparently, according to Nicholas Jackson, and came in with the baseball bats. Baseball bats, obviously synonymous to Sting. Took out Sting, took out Darby. Darby busted open. Sting's sons came to get involved because they were on the apron by the time Sting was celebrating. They got taken out as well. Yeah, Darby completely bloodied and everything, just picking up himself and holding himself. The blood was all over the white suits and everything. Took out Sting. There's a couple super kicks in there and stuff as well. So, you know, this was, I guess, the heat that we probably thought they would get at the pay-per-view for beating Sting. They've acquired the heat already now. And we've still got, you know, the best part of 3 weeks or so to tell this story of, you know, what will most likely be Darby Allin and Sting defending those AEW World Tag Team titles against Nicholas and Matthew Jackson. What did you think about this match and segment?
Listen, the match was a great load of fun. I think Sting's AEW run has been like sensational. When it's all said and done, we're gonna look back and I'm gonna say like this is one of the that this is the blueprint for how to book a legend. Like not somebody who's old, but like a legend who you clearly know is out of it. You book them in this manner. You know, Sting is somebody, he's been undefeated in AEW, but he's never taken the spot of an upcoming talent. In fact, he's enhanced one in Darby. The Darby and Sting pairing, you know, has been, you know, a great pairing. And even though he's gone undefeated, it never feels like, oh, he's a nuisance to the show or he's booking himself to the top. He always just feels like Sting is a great part of why I'm watching Dynamite. So this match was just another example of that. But the Young Bucks, these guys should never be faces again. These men are just so good at being detestable. Like, it is perfect. And it speaks to the Young Bucks' greatest credit is how aware they are in terms of people have spoken about their business acumen. People have spoken, but just the Young Bucks know, okay, we're not the most liked figures in the world. We're more polarizing than we've ever been, and we already started being polarizing. Okay, people think that All Elite Wrestling is this company that is a madhouse, no rules, and we're inmates running the asylum. Okay, let's lean into that with our characters. We're EVPs. Then we're gonna go for like Sting, probably one of the most beloved figures in wrestling, but even in the context of AEW, absolutely beloved. We're gonna go for him. And just even wearing white and then having blood all over the white, just another genius touch. I mean, these men are going to be absolutely lambasted by the time they get to the pay-per-view. They're going to be booed. They're going to be, and whether it's for the angle itself or whether it's for the public perception of them, who cares? Because it's adding to the product. This is how you use real world stuff to generate heat. Even the stuff like the EVP trigger. Just little touches like that. I can't wait for this. I need a generational title run. And they already gave us one the first time they won the AEW tag team titles. But I need to see a reign of tyranny. And like we said before, Hangman's, you know, joining the dark side. Could we get a heel of fully 100% every member of the Elite is a heel run from these guys? Man, I'm just, and we spoke even about like the smoke and mirrors of like the tornado tags. The Young Bucks are specialists of anarchy matches, of chaos matches. This is their domain. This is where they live in terms of, yeah, these guys are spot monkeys. Okay, cool. We're going to have a spot monkey match with the guy whose all his matches in AEW are smoke and mirrors. It's a match made in heaven. This segment was great, man. I was just smiling because I was like, this is what Nick and Matt Jackson need to be doing. I don't want to see another face run again. They can be faces in their retirement match, and that's about it. These men are natural born heels. They should stay that way.
Yeah, I agree. I think obviously all the rumors when they kind of said they were going away or whatever the case was, that they were going to come back as heels. But they've latched on to, obviously, the retirement as a way to kind of cement the heel run. Like, it's undisputed. Like, we are going to be bad guys if we go against Sting and Darby. So, yeah, it's just a great bit of booking, what they've been doing in and around the show over the last few weeks, even without kind of appearing in ring and stuff like that, has been great. It's been fun as well. And now we've got them out in the ring, laying waste to two of probably the most beloved people in AEW. And yeah, nicely build into this pay-per-view match. It's going to be interesting to see on Darby and Sting side of things that, you know, they're going to be champions for what, the best part of 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Do we give them a defense in between, like, you know, how long do they sell this particular beat down for or anything like that? Yeah, just how they're going to do it before and how the Young Bucks are going to insert themselves into the title picture, especially because now there's rankings. Are they just going to be EVPs and be like, we're taking the title match?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's going to happen in terms of, I feel like there'll be like maybe like a battle royal, you know, AEW do these tag team battle royals or whatever. But I think it'll be like, let's say, you know, like, okay, perfect example, a casino, they do one of these dumb casino battle royals. Who's the Joker? Last entrance, the Young Bucks. They just come in. It's like, we weren't even announced for the match, but we're here now. We're going to win, and we're EVPs, so there's nothing much you can say about it. I definitely think it's going to be, they're going to break the rankings rule. Whatever they do, it's going to be in contradiction to the rankings. But in this specific case, it works because in storyline, they're EVPs, and the whole characters, I think, going forward, are going to be, these are men that abuse their power.
Yeah.
So in this, I think in this, it's going to be great, man. I can't wait. And then they've got a bunch of, they've already hinted at Top Flight being, you know, somebody they feud with down the line. You know, I just want to see them slowly just bullying the locker room, being passive aggressive, randomly finding people. Yeah.
Yeah, it should be good. It should be good. There's a lot there to play with. A lot of talent there to mix it up with. Returning tag teams, new tag teams that they haven't mingled with. So yeah, it should get a really good run out of this.
Sorry, not to be too dirt sheety, but why are FTR so far away from everything now?
Bro, I don't know.
It's something like that needs to be even the timing of it, because even the timing of them dropping the titles to Big Bill and Ricky Starks, and then them just being completely like, not even, because I found it very interesting, like when, you know, Private Party came back, you know, they kind of laid claim to we're the best tag team in this, they started listing off names, FTR nowhere to be found. They're doing trios matches with Daniel Garcia, and granted, they were just champions, but they feel so detached from the title picture when they are one of the best tag teams out there. I'm sure, for example, when Phoenix comes back and the Lucha Bros come back, they're going to be right in the mix again.
Well, I don't think we can ignore the fact that they are Team CM Punk.
Yes.
And obviously a lot has happened between Punk and the Elite and FTR and this, that, and the other. I think that's probably part of the reason that they've went into the trios division seemingly as well.
Yeah.
So that we don't have to kind of, you know, come face to face with the Bucks for now anyway, whilst things could still be deemed somewhat fresh. It's a shame. It's a shame ultimately because, you know, I don't mind Daniel Garcia and FTR running together. Like some people, I think someone was even saying last week over the weekend, you know, are we going to get FTR and Edge? Rated FTR, whatever they're going to call themselves, who knows? But like, it's ultimately avoidance, like you're saying, because, you know, there's bigger fish to fry. Let's call a spade a spade. And with them, I'm pretty sure when they signed this last contract, they said, this is it. They said that they're done after this contract. They're done wrestling, full stop. Like, I think they've signed a 5-year deal, but like, yeah, I don't think from what they said then when they signed it, they have much intention of wrestling beyond the next, at this point, 4 years. Mm. So, Yeah, you would like to think, you know, men can be men and sort out their squabbles, and just, you know, especially if this is going to be their last run, they do what's right. You know, get back into that tag team division, maybe win the title one more time, mix it up with the best tag teams in the world that AEW have to offer, put over some tag teams. I would like to think this isn't going to just be 4 years of let's try to dance around the Young Bucks and not get involved sort of thing. We have to see. But right now, like you're saying, it's not good viewing. Like, they're having some good trios matches over in Collision. Again, I don't care, and it's inconsequential, really. Like, it's a shame. It's a shame.
I just want them back in the mix. Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be a Young Bucks feud, but there's guys like Private Party, there's guys like Top Flight. There are other guys for you to face in it, so...
Unless that man go to Collision, it don't even seem. I don't even know when was the last time FTR were on Dynamite. So
I can't remember. And that feels extremely intentional.
Yeah,
because even though Danielson, I class Danielson as a Collision guy. He shows up on Dynamite. Claudio is mostly a Collision guy. Shows up on Dynamite. Like the whole back, like people are going back and forth from Collision, but it just feels like FTR. Are just relegated, and House of Black to a degree, are just relegated to Collision.
House of Black. Yeah, it's a shame. I think they need to do better on that side of things.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's wrap up the rest of the show. We saw Toni Storm. She had a match against Red Velvet. This was an eliminator match for Red Velvet anyway. If she, you know, got a win here, she could have lay claim to an AEW Women's World title match after beating a champion. Pretty decent match between the two. Nothing of like real massive note happened. We had Deonna Purrazzo on commentary, who wasn't anywhere as near as entertaining as Toni Storm on commentary, but that's neither here or there. We saw a big boot and a hip attack by Toni Storm. After I don't think she could pull that off. Then we saw an ankle lock, I guess, playing into the fact that she has some type of technical nous again to go against Deonna Purrazzo, who is obviously putting herself over as a technician. What did you think of this woman's match here?
I thought it was fine. I want another segment, a proper like. I know we had like a sit-down segment between Deonna Purrazzo and Toni Storm. But I kind of want like a classical JR sit-down segment where it's like backstage, pre-recorded, where we kind of just get these women like talking. We'll probably get another Deonna Purrazzo match before then, but I just want a few more Deonna Purrazzo matches just to, you know, just see her in AEW a lot more. I want to know how Mariah May factors into this. Obviously, she's with Toni. But I feel like I don't think they'll waste that Mariah May and Deonna Purrazzo match. But I feel, you know, a bit more interaction between them two is needed because that's essentially what kicked this all off. Like the first person that she Deonna Purrazzo interrupted Mariah May after her debut. So I kind of want to see that angle of things. But you know, it was like fine stuff this week. I think what was it 2 weeks ago they had the sit down segment. Was it 2 weeks ago they had a sit down segment. This week was kind of like a calm down, but I feel like as we get closer to Revolution, it's about really taking it to the next gear. I feel like the feud hasn't, like, it's got one more gear to go before it's like ready.
Yeah, and like you said, they're probably building other things in the back. I think so. Obviously, Mariah May, her whole thing is, did you watch my match? And Toni Storm clearly has no intention of watching her match, and it's like, you know, you watch one match, you see, what did she say? You watch one match, you've seen them all or something like that to Mariah May, basically dismissing her. And I think the first match Toni Storm is going to watch is Deonna Purrazzo beating Mariah May. Maybe the week before Revolution or so. We'll see whenever that takes place. But I feel that's maybe when she does it. And then obviously she lambasts Mariah May for losing to Deonna Purrazzo or whatever she calls her. And then, like you said, maybe we kind of get some tension between Mariah May and Toni Storm. And then, you know, that might lead to Mariah May getting her own title match just as like her in between for a TV special or TV show or something like that. I agree that it probably needs some more heat behind it, these two. Like, I just feel like it's heavy on Tony's character right now. And I think we all probably have, you know, one eye on Deanna Purrazzo is not winning this, so then it's hard to get a bit more invested. So we want more from it to get more invested in it. But yeah, decent stuff. We had this backstage stuff, in fact, I just touch on. Orange Cassidy and Best Friends, they were backstage with Remarkable Renee Paquette, and she was obviously kind of gushing over the fact Orange Cassidy is going to face Tomohiro Ishii on Collision this week for the International Championship. And I was laughing so hard when Trent must have went, you're facing Ishii? That's weird. And I was thinking, what's weird about it, sort of thing? Like, why are you so pressed? And they spoke about Chuck Taylor, that Chuck Taylor is currently injured. He's getting checked out and stuff like that. They were all about to disperse and go see Chuck Taylor without doing their usual all hands in guys and all that kind of stuff. There seems to be some tension between these guys. Renee Paquette, funny enough, seems to be the glue holding them together right now.
Yeah.
And I the thought came across my head just because of, obviously, history. Do you debut Okada here to... I know you don't. Don't get me wrong. I know that you don't. But because of history, are they trying to set up that Okada's going to be maybe the glue to hold these lot together? Because there seems to be something messing around with them.
Because they're all chaos and...
Yeah, so that's what came across my mind. I hope they don't. I don't want Okada affiliated with them at all, to be honest. But like,
I wouldn't mind a random Dynamite. Hey, we got Okada and Orange Cassidy as a tag team for a random one-off night. That's fine. Mm. I wouldn't mind that. Like, in terms of like, hey, okay, Okada and Orange Cassidy is a tag team. They face whoever. That's fine. I don't care. Not as a long-term thing, but just like as a, you know, okay, these guys are loosely affiliated with each other. No problem. Because as much as Okada is the rainmaker, he can be a clown at times as well. I would not have him like be like the parental figure in this family squabble. Absolutely not.
I hope not.
Nah.
Cool. I guess I'll just mention it now. Later on, we saw it looked like the Undisputed Kingdom have taken out Chuck Taylor backstage. Obviously, I guess leading and building towards Roderick Strong and his international title match with Orange Cassidy. I think I mentioned this earlier. I think this was just a weak segment. Like, I don't think we even needed it. Like, it didn't do anything for me personally. I don't think, you know, it's helping Undisputed Kingdom beat some of the allegations out there, like that right now they're a dud. I just don't think if you can't give us them in all their heel glory, then I think just leave it, sort of.
Just leave it alone. I feel like there's been a miscalculation and a misstep. They should have just went straight for Bullet Club Gold and Acclaimed. Like, none of this filler stuff. That it should have just been faction warfare. Keep these man hot. Yeah, you can still keep the Roderick Strong side project going on in terms of like the international title. That's perfectly fine. But none of this. What are we dilly dallying around with Best Friends for? Like, they should have been hunting down the Acclaimed.
Yeah, literally. You managed to hunt them down when you were all under masks and stuff like that. But now, like, I don't know. It's just spinning the wheels kind of thing. Right. Well, I think we lost NK again. NK, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm here.
I think your picture's frozen.
Oh, great. I need a new webcam. But yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Let's go on to the CMLL segment. Masquerade Dorado, Volador Jr., and I'm going to butcher my man's name, Hikario. They were going up against Blackpool Combat Club, Moxley Danielson, and Claudio Castagnoli. really fun match. I think these lot had a really, really solid match. You know, the lucha style mixed with the brawling of Moxley and the strong base of Claudio Castagnoli, and then Danielson just mixing it up, doing the technical wrestling with Hikario. I thought this was really good. We spoke at length, I guess, last week on the podcast around partnerships and this, that, and the other. It was weird. I don't know if I think I semi-expected the CMLL guys to win here just because Danielson got the win on the weekend against Hikario on Collision. But they didn't get the win here. However, they were like cheated out of the win. I know there was a low blow. Castagnoli hit Hikario with a low blow and then pinned him. But yeah, I thought this was a really good match. Post-match, we saw some of the other CMLL guys run in and go after Blackpool Combat Club. But the AEW stars, or Team AEW, as Shivani called it, came to the rescue. And listen, I'm not infused by who Team AEW consists of. Daddy Magic, Angelo Parker, Christopher Daniels. Like, I don't know. I'm not confident with these guys. Yeah, they came to make the save, and there's just a lot of shouting and stuff at each other and stuff like that. NK, what did you think of this between CMLL and CMLL Luchadors and Blackpool Combat Club?
Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I thought it was really fun. I'm gonna butcher his name. The guy who wrestled Danielson on Collision,
Hikario.
He is sensational. Just yeah, like his prowess when it comes to like being a technical wrestler is just A1. I did expect the CMLL guys to get a win. But I do feel like they will get their lit back at some point. I feel like this has to build to the Blackpool Combat Club going to Arena Mexico. When it comes to the other players of AEW, Team AEW, I hope that's not a thing. I hope that's just a one-off reference, because I feel like these guys don't need to be involved in anything in particular.
This is
I think the feud is primarily concentrated with Blackpool Combat Club. And CML. I do want to see more singles matches as well. So maybe Claudio gets paired off with someone, Moxie gets paired off with someone, and it's a thing that evolves week to week. I think it's pretty, I won't say it's pretty clear, but I definitely feel like these guys will have an involvement at Forbidden Door as a whole. And it's good to see. It is good to see, because I'm very ignorant to the CM Mexican Lucha Wrestling right now, in terms of I don't particularly keep up with who's a big star, who's this and that. So this is a lot of this time, this is my first exposure to this man, to these guys. And like, these guys on my, but for me personally, they're making a good account of themselves. I just want to see more. I just want to see them more featured more often. I know you can't really tell like the most in-depth storylines due to the nature of not only just cross promotion, but you know, might be a language barrier here and there. So it's gotta just be like faction on faction warfare. It's strange though, because I'd love to see CMLL stars interact with other luchadors in AEW as well. But then obviously some of these guys have affiliations with AAA, and it gets messy. So yeah, seeing them interact with BCC is cool. But I think if this doesn't end in Mexico, then what we did, we must see these guys on a CMLL pay-per-view in Arena Mexico duking it out. It has to happen.
Yeah, which will be good. I won't be, if they set up a trios match for these men to take on Daddy Magic, Christopher Daniels, and Angelo Parker just to get a win, it won't mean nothing to me. So I don't understand why they're really here doing up Team AEW and stuff like that. I personally don't need it, but we'll see how the story gets on. Where you've said should be the destination is what I'm looking for. But yeah, we'll move on to the last thing for us to touch on that happened on this show. Chris Jericho versus Konosuke Takeshita. I can't believe we're still here. Like, I really can't believe that things just haven't moved on. And I guess Jericho has somewhat beaten his allegations, hence why he's reappeared on Dynamite. And I can't believe that Takeshita is still in this holding pattern. But here we are. We had this match between the two. We had Hobbs on the outside, Don Callis on the outside. At one point, we saw Sammy Guevara comes in with a chair to hit Hobbs. Cutter off the steps, you know, Hobbs from another chair shot, I think it was, fell into the crowd, and him and Guevara went away from there. There was some decent stuff between, you know, Takeshita and Jericho, you know, because, you know, Takeshita's a really solid talent. We saw Jericho put Takeshita in the Walls of Jericho. Don Callis slides in a chair to distract the referee, and then he hits Jericho in the head with the screwdriver, like a quick stab to his head. Takeshita then flips things around. He puts Jericho in the Walls of Jericho, and we get the kind of lift up your arm twice, and on the third time, Jericho woke up. Takeshita sunk it in deep, and Jericho had no choice but to tap. So Takeshita gets the win here. What did you think of this match?
Yeah, it was all right. I'm tired of this. But do you know what is with Takeshita? It's so baffling, because it's like they give him a win over Kenny Omega, he does nothing afterwards. They give him a win over Jericho, and I don't see the immediate follow-up. I don't see there being like an immediate, which is like, why are you giving him the wins in the first place? We know why, because Takeshita is an absolutely supreme talent. But it's a thing of just like, give him something valuable to do. I think the Don Callis pairing, while conceptually I understood it, is a failure. It's of the Don Callis, scrap it, disband it, still keep Takeshita as a heel.
Mm.
A heel Takeshita, I think, has legs with it, but have him do something else. I don't know what exactly. But this ain't it. This right here ain't it. Like, you're giving him wins, so in kayfabe, you've kept him, like, relevant. But these wins aren't amounting to anything. I'm not saying Takeshita needs to now be in the title picture. But even something like not putting Takeshita in the Continental Classic was an absolute mistake.
Yeah.
That would have been a quick distraction. Hey, Takeshita's still good, and you know, keep him hot. Especially if we're gonna put Mandem like Andrade in there, who just left the next month.
I was just about to say, you put Andrade in there for what reason?
For what?
When you knew deep down he was leaving.
You presented him with a few wins, and you kind of made him a little bit more hot for WWE to just thank you. Makes no sense, but Takeshita's there doing nothing. I'm like, this Don Callis project is done. It's done, man. There's no one's benefiting. No, one thing I am worried about Ospreay is him having to clean up this mess and be associated with these man. The Don Callis. This is the one thing I'm just like, bruv, we're gonna have to at least waste weeks of booking to even clean his affiliation with these man, because you've established it. Get rid of it. Have him face some other guys across the roster. Because there's something in Takeshita. I don't know what the immediate fix is. I don't know if it's a mid-card title for now. I don't know whether it's a long-term feud with someone. Anything. I'm begging. Just anything.
I think I don't mind like taking us on a little journey where it's like, yeah, what are you leading me to here? Or even when Ospreay comes in, Takeshita's just a bit disgruntled. Like, you brought in Hobbs, you brought in Ospreay. Like, aren't I supposed to be like the project here sort of thing? I like, if Takeshita turns back to a baby face, he doesn't have to become like a stupid baby face. Like, he can just be a regular baby face, and maybe he's the person that wins the belt off Strong. If Roderick Strong's going to win the international title, Takeshita can win it from there and just go on a run, putting on great matches, defending an international title, bringing the feeling back to himself, sort of thing. Of this is what he came to do. That was our introduction to Takeshita, just putting on great matches, even though a lot of them then were in defeat. Like, because ultimately this faction stuff isn't bringing him nothing with Don Callis anyway. So like, yeah, we need to kind of cleanse the palate. Even Hobbs. The Hobbs is another discussion which we just don't even have time for. But like, Hobbs was hot going in there. Like, and now what?
Yeah, I wasn't even a fan of Hobbs joining because I was like, why? But fair, I was like, why? And then we've got the Sammy Guevara element, which is still the same thing. He's just interfering. This whole thing stinks, man. This whole Don Callis, Jericho universe, throw it away. We don't want it. And like, oh,
it's been going on since July last year, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
It's just don't need it. Just don't need it at all. Don't need it to be continuing. Just don't need it on this new, fresh 2024 AEW product. Just don't need it at all. Guys, that was AEW Dynamite. The show has went very, very long today, but you know, a lot of good stuff to talk about. The show's on the up. The show's improving. There's a lot of big names coming in. There's a lot of big stuff happening. We're building to one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year in AEW Revolution. And it seems like, as well as Revolution, the week or so after is going to be immense with AEW Big Business on the horizon. NK, any last words before we get out of here?
Listen, shout out to all the TNA fans won today. You got Samoa Joe as your champion, as your world heavyweight champion, Christian as a TNT champion, and Sting as a tag team champion. So for all my TNA nostalgia people out there, you know, it was a good night for you lot.
Yeah, I'm sure they're gonna be happy with that.
Let me go on Impact after this and see if they made a post after Sting. they possibly
You know, then they would have making it when the match was happening, knowing that what was going to be the outcome.
Trust me.
Big up everyone that was here live with us today. Big up everyone that's going to listen back to this. You can catch this on the podcast feeds, so whether you've got Apple Music, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, you can get it there as well weekly. If you are watching live, please make sure you hit the like button. Subscribe to Rest Things as well if you're new here, and we'll be back same time next week talking all things AEW Dynamite. We'll see you guys soon.